Well, so the question is, who is crazy? We can see all the monks sitting in a meditational pose, and there's one sitting like kind of relaxed on the grass, and it's not tolerated by the group. I used to be a young, crazy rebel, just like you, you know. It's a fact that how artificial can we live? And that is, we are human beings and we have human needs. And especially over a longer period of time, how long can we sustain an unnatural way of life? Any spiritual practice will be tested. Srila Prabhupada used to make that point that Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind. It's not just some a discipline that we are trying to follow. No, it is connecting to our true nature. Of course, nature is complicated, because what is our nature? If we go back a little, let's see. Maybe I'll take it back a little more. So it is said that human beings, they live out their lives suspended between the borders of nature and culture. We are somewhere between nature and culture. And many things have become like a second nature. It's completely natural for us to use a bathroom. But animals, for animals, that's not natural. Animals just let it go wherever they are, and it takes quite some training. But so the culture has become so much part of us that we never think of it, that this is an artificial thing in so many aspects in our life. So it is said nature and culture, they kind of grow together in such a way that it's sometimes difficult to understand what is nature, what is culture. So human beings are in that way living a life between the borders of nature and culture. Then we go at different stages of our life. There are major changes. Such major changes in our life are known as rites of passage. We go from youth to adulthood, and different societies deal with that in a different way. But the idea is that there are changes. We change from being a child to an adult, and there are different needs. First we played, and now we have other desires. So then the culture offers us some continuum, some things that, although there are changes, that stay with us. So we are not only living with nature. Children, they can steal, and it's not considered a crime, because it's natural. Just to see something nice, put it in your pocket. What's wrong with that, from a child's perspective? But as an adult, that doesn't work anymore. And even if the desire is there, sometimes the intelligence says, no, can't do this. So we see culture, desire are two things going hand in hand. So Krishna consciousness requires to engage human nature, but at the same time channel it so that nature is leading to a higher goal. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur once said, he said to the ladies, he said that even of all the men in the world, right, there is no man that can satisfy a woman. Yeah. It's not possible. So that dream is there, that there will be a man who will be able to satisfy all one's desires. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta destroyed the balloon with a pin and basically said, no, that man doesn't exist. There is no man who can satisfy a woman. It's not possible. So there's always this. Then he said to the man, he said that, and man, even if a man would have all the women in the world, he would still not be satisfied. So that shows something of the tendencies of men and women. That women are looking for the perfect man, who of course doesn't exist. And men, they are not satisfied with one. They want them all, but still will not be satisfied. So then there is the culture. The culture regulates these things. And no, both these tendencies have to be adjusted. So we are... This is the difference between human beings and animals, that human beings have culture. Animals have nature. Animals just act according to nature. Whatever nature dictates, that they do. Human beings also have a need to express nature, but through culture. What is culture? Culture is what offers us boundaries, safe boundaries, to express our desires. So that we can live out our desires, but yet in a way that it doesn't get us in trouble. That's why marriage, right? Because then the relationship is also dealing with all the consequences. Then children come, then there is an arrangement to take care. So that's culture. Like that, spiritual life is also offering a culture, and our commitments is part of culture. That is what culture requires, that we make commitments to higher principles. And it said there are vidhi and niseya. The vidhi are positive injunctions, and the niseya are prohibitions in the Vedic culture. So some things we should do that are favorable, and some things we should not do that are unfavorable. So that is quite... it is natural. Although in the beginning it doesn't feel very natural, that if you hear about these principles. When I first saw the Hare Krishnas, there was a gray van pulling into my town, and there were many, many little pink men coming out of that van. Too many, if you know what I mean. So I wasn't sure. And then I went into a shop, and I saw them from behind the glass, and someone said, "It's a dangerous sect," and they surely look dangerous. 3 months later, I saw them on television, and they were explaining their philosophy. No meat, fish, or eggs, gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. Then I knew that they were dangerous. Confirmed that these people are just like extreme. I mean, this is not like, not human, not natural. This is dangerous. This is oppressing human nature. And Freud, the Encyclopedia Britannica, says that Debatably so, the one who has had the biggest impact on the intellectual life of modern man is Sigmund Freud, right, who has basically offered us a model of a pressure cooker, that we are like pressure cookers, and that if you suppress your nature, that unless you let out steam, it will explode. And therefore, in the modern society, there is this thing that you can't suppress your nature. That's dangerous. That is dangerous. Sooner or later, too much pressure will build up inside, and then you'll just have to give in to your nature just to let out some steam. So what about it? So then you suddenly, and especially in psychology, and certainly in Freud's concept, sexuality takes a big place. Like Carl Jung once did a psychoanalysis of Sigmund Freud, and he said, obviously, sex means a lot more to Freud than to most people. Which is like interesting. But Prabhupada in some ways was agreeing with Freud. When Brahmananda, one of Prabhupada's very, very early disciples, and very close to him, Brahmananda said, he said, when I was in college, my professor, he said, you know, he was marking one of my papers, and in the paper I had made the point that in everyone there is an inherent drive for spirituality, for an inclination towards religiousness. And the professor just completely disagreed and just gave me very bad marks for the paper and wrote a comment and said, no, the fundamental drive in people is sex. Brahmananda said, just see these materialists. And Prabhupada said, your professor was right. So, yes, this is there in material life. That is very strong. Srimad Bhagavatam is also dealing with sexuality. And he's saying that the entire world, with all its beautiful forests, with its lakes, with its meadows and fields, with its hills and valleys, with its cities, its parks, and all its arrangements, is just the backdrop for romance. The whole world is like the stage for romance. That's really what it's about. And that is what Srimad Bhagavatam is saying. So, certainly, we see that the vows, or the culture that we're living with, is dealing with that. And every culture is basically dealing with that. The modern culture is from a Vedic perspective, a little bit oversexed, giving too much emphasis on sex in the modern society. Vedic culture is not in denial, but Vedic culture points out that although the drive for sexuality is very strong, very, very strong in every living being, it's not the first priority in life. Because it is not the primary source of happiness. The desire may be very strong, but it is not the primary source of happiness. It may be that all embodied living beings are compelled to and dictated by such desires, but it doesn't actually provide us great happiness. Therefore, there are other things in life which are more important for achieving happiness. And especially spirituality is ultimately more important for bringing happiness in life. Therefore, that must be placed in the center in life. But not to the exclusion, not to denial of sexuality. You see, that's also there. Our human nature must be provided for. We cannot just declare that all taboo, right? This is taboo, and this is something we don't talk about, this is something forbidden, this is something behind closed curtains and closed doors in marriage, and it is not discussed, it is not really condoned in society. That kind of atmosphere is not at all Krishna consciousness. In Bhagavatam and in Vedic culture, we see that that when a couple felt, now we are married, now we are settled, now we would like to have children, then the sexuality that was involved with that would be a public affair. They would ask blessings of everyone. They would tell, yes, we will perform this sanskar, we will try and conceive a child, we ask for your blessings, we ask for your blessings. All the elders were asked for blessings, actually. And then they would purify themselves and try to conceive a child. So that sounds like a very nice way to try and have a child, in the sense that you may have a very good child, and all the blessings are there, and so on. Janani, can I also have a cup of tea? Fucked up today. So that is a big part in our life, and but one thing still lingering in the back of my mind. And what about embracing, kissing, and all that as a sign of affection? Yeah, as a sign of affection, it's all right. But then, okay, when it translates into sexuality, then it changes. Gestures of affection, fine, that is all right. Of course, there is a borderline. So there are one in our culture. We are careful. But what about sexuality when there is love between a man and a woman as an expression of that love? Isn't it a very beautiful thing? It is something highly glorified in the world. It's like that sexuality is a means of expression of love. Well, yes, but it also binds us to the body. It is, there may be affection between two souls, but we express it then on the platform of the body also. And the result will be that there will be attachment to the body. And well, on the way in here, we just drove past the emergency ward of a hospital, and yeah, they have those things. Bodies, well, I don't know about yours, but I know a lot of people, and it's really amazing what is wrong with the people you know, right? I mean, when you look at people like strangers, you have no idea. But once you get to know them, and you find out this one has a hole in his heart, that one has a hip replacement. I've named a few people that are close to me, right? Some of my close associates, one has a hip replacement, another one has a hole. Actually, two have a hole in the heart, leaking valves and things. Someone has a brain that has moved a bit in the head, and that doesn't help. Lots of people I know are half blind, right? And then, of course, some people that I know described how they had their eyes fixed with laser beams, you know, and again, all the graphic descriptions and how they were lying there sort of sedated and have to look at one point and how then it gets zapped with the laser and that you can smell the smell of burning flesh and those are your eyeballs. I mean, intense. I think I'll go over the glasses, I'm sorry. Not that I like them, but you know, burnt eyeballs. I don't know. So, when we are attached to the body, it will also bind us in a body. And I don't know. There are, you know, that time when I had a toothache and I went to the dentist and the dentist drilled a hole in my tooth and said, uh-oh, it's gonna be a root canal. I go, oh no, not a root canal. All right, here we go, root canal. Drilling on the nerve, right? Drill on the nerve, somehow or other, pull up the nerve, and then the nerve is out, and then they put a piece of cotton in there, with disinfectant, right? And my dentist also had an iPhone, and it just rang, and boy, oh boy, he forgot the piece of cotton in there, and it stayed in there, and 2.5 years later, I had the toothache of my life. And nothing showed on the x-rays. No, there's nothing wrong with you. That yes, there is. All right, we open it up because cotton doesn't show on x-rays. And anyway, then they found the cotton. By then, that cotton was full of chemicals. It had disintegrated the root and the root had pulverized in there. And then they said, oh boy, this is going to be, we're going to have to take it out operational. So I went in there and I felt the pulling on my head, of course, drugged out. I heard the drilling, the chiseling, etc. And they literally dug out, they didn't pull the tooth, they dug it out and left a crater as big as a moon crater in my mouth. Well, those are some of the sweet moments, sweet memories in my life. Those are some of those memories that sort of are there, where I think, well, Kadamba Kanana Swami, would you want to take another birth and go through that again? No, no, no things, no things. I remember many things. I remember being in school and having to learn how to write. And in my days in school, you had to write with a pen that you had to dip in an ink pot. Right? And oh my God, I was terrible at it. Right? Ink everywhere. Everywhere. I mean, you saw yesterday the stains on my cloth. Well, it was something like that. There was ink all over. Everywhere, ink in my hair, ink everywhere. God, I was bad at it. I don't know how any others, there were these kids, you know, they were really good, and they immediately started writing neat and clean, not me. Oh God, the tip of the pen would break, or, you know, so many things. Misery, misery, misery. Ink pots, and then you could knock it over, the ink pot. You're talking to someone, oops. Oh my God. So, nightmares. Do I want to go back to school? Not really. No, not really. I think I'm done with it. I don't know how many times I went to school, but I really think I had enough. I think I had enough. I don't want to go back to school. No thanks. And so on and so on. I think, so one has to think about it. We cannot just become overwhelmed by feelings. We have to also look at the consequences. And that is, culture is about foresight and intelligence, and it considers the long term. It's like, well, all right, I feel this affection, I want to express it on a bodily platform, and I feel that it's a very beautiful thing. All right, it is in the moment. I appreciate that. I'm not criticizing it, but that's not all there's to it. It also creates attachment to the body. And attachment to the body is the main cause for another birth. And I'm sure you want that. You see? I want to ask the questions. Why do children, when they come out of the womb, why do they cry? Why don't they come out singing, "Mommy, I love you"? Why? It's just a perennial question, right, that we must consider. Why is the first thing a baby does is cry? And then it goes on intensely for quite some time. It's like, every man needs a soundproof room. Right? I tell you, gentlemen, invest. Invest, make one room, isolate it well, and that's your study room, right? Put your name sign on there, it's your room. And you, anytime you need it, you can go in. And it's like, that noise, my God. So the point is that there is suffering. Children cry because they suffer. Not because they're happy. They suffer. So do we want to go through all that again and again and again? That's the idea. So we have to understand that we are not condemning. We are not fanatics. We're not against you. We're not Puritans or Victorian sex. That's a horrible thing. That's not it. But we are looking at the long-term consequences and all the aspects, everything. We are not. We don't have a blind spot. We don't just see one thing. Oh, it's so lovely, oh, I'm so happy, I know. But on the plane, when we came in, there was about a two-year-old, a little bit too big for crying so much. But this boy was crying for 4 hours, non-stop, at like intense volume with anger, you know, like, I mean, you know how kids can cry with, anyway. 4 hours, and it was so loud. There was no sleep. It was just forget it. You know? Just absolutely forget it. I mean, we all, every adult in the plane looked at each other. Oh my God! The mother tried to become invisible. Everyone gave her evil looks, you know, like, what are you doing about it, you know? A few had some tips, you know. We have an old Dutch remedy, you know, which is known as the cold tap, a cold water tap. When nothing works, that works. But the lady wasn't ready for the Dutch action, so it went on and on and on. Alright, probably he was afraid of flying, I guess. But meanwhile, it was extreme. So we should see the full picture. You're going to just go, oh, so sweet, how cute. Not always cute, right? Not always. Sometimes really too much, right? Too much. Ladies want to have children, but immediately after childbirth, they usually say, no more, no more. God, you know, I'm glad I survived this, no more, right? Husband also said, this is too much, you know, they almost died, right, in having the child. So it's like, you know, we're not doing this again. Then, of course, you know, another romantic summer night, violins are playing. Anyway, there's another child on the way. Marriage, we're having another one. Oh, bless, bless. It's easy to bless. Yeah. No, I must say that at one point we have to. The Bhagavatam says we have to become akinchana-bhuchyam. We have to become materially exhausted, where we say, no, it's fine. I will just leave it now. I see that the material world has two sides to it. There are many beautiful things in the material world. We are not denying. We agree. Yes, yes, yes. It's nice. The sun is very nice and warm, sometimes too warm though, the lack of sun is too cold. The point is, we are not sober. In the mode of passion, it's like, wow, did you see that? Oh, that looks really, really nice. Oh, Ram, a golden deer. Oh, Ram, I must have it. Sita, I think it's not a deer. It's golden. I mean, have you ever seen such a golden? Oh, I must have it. Sita, I don't think that it's a deer. There is something wrong. I think it's someone disguising as a deer. Oh, you just don't want to get it for me. Oh, making excuses. Right? No, oh, I want it so much. Oh, all right then. I'll go and get it. But I think something is not right. Laxman, you'd better stay here and protect Sita. Are coming out, oh Laxman. Satan, don't speak like that. How can you speak in such a way? Just the thought of it is even too much. All right, I am going. I am going. And Sita was left alone.
So, there are many golden deers in the world. Many golden opportunities. Many amazing things. And we should not just look at the glitter. Oh, I must have this. So we'll see, well, what strings are attached. What else is related to it? And this is the vision of the wise. In the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it speaks about the elders. Arjuna is saying that he doesn't want to fight. He doesn't see the benefit of the fight. And he says that you ask me to fight with my elders. You ask me to fight with Bhishma, Drona, with my elders. But if the elders are killed, who will protect society? Youth and folly go together. Bhaktisiddhanta said, the youth, they have a license to sometimes break the rules. It's just the nature of youth. But when we're older and wiser, we know, you break the rules. But then what? Then you get the consequences. You have to pay for it. I don't care. I'll pay anything. You don't know, young man. You don't know. You don't have the capacity. You don't have the strength to deal with all what is coming. No, I can do it. No, you can't. Yes, no, don't worry about me. I'll do it. I'll take it. But later, oh God, this is too much. I can't handle this. This is too much. Why didn't you hold me back? Much help. And now it's too late. Now you blew it. So like that, we see that we have to trust. Part of following this whole Vedic culture and this whole system of rules, we have to trust it. And to put our trust that this is it, that these rules are not there to harass us, but that they're there to protect us, and that they're there to uplift us, and that they are mercy, and that they are designed by our well-wishers. We have to trust. This is the spirit. Anyway, it is not so easy. Like here, the third point, the conflict between one's aspirations and strivings for individual ventures and yearnings for assurance and sustenance from one's social group. So here we are as a group together. In one way, you want to be free from the group that is always watching everything you do. And on the other hand, you need them for your support. So this tendency for freedom is there in everyone. Anyway, we have to it's doing all these fancy things that I don't even want. We have to be balanced. That is the point. Life is about being balanced. Without being balanced, we cannot deal with everything. Yeah, it's hard to read. What can I do? But I will... that's just technology. But I will tell you. Have you ever juggled three oranges? Did you ever try and throw them up in the air? Three balls? Girls are generally doing this. Or you see these guys in the park, juggling all kinds of things, throwing them up in the air. They're really good at clowns in the circus. Yeah. Some juggling sometimes, yeah. In the bank, yeah. Doesn't work in the bank anymore, but in the bank, at least at the till. juggling the money. Now we have to juggle, and the model of juggling is the model of being balanced. It is very interesting because when you have three balls and you're juggling them, one is in the air, one you are just catching, and another one you're throwing up in the air. So it is like that also in spiritual life. We have to look after three things. Well, let's start with ourselves, with our personal well-being. We have to look after our personal well-being. Health, peace of mind, some satisfaction is needed. You need some satisfaction. If you don't have any satisfaction in your life, how long are we going to last? So, all that is needed. Yes. So, that situates us in some occupation, in an ashram. What else? Yeah. In a place, friendship, association, all these things. So this is important. We should not become so renounced that we I don't care about that anymore. Now I'm only interested in Krishna. Not interested in anything else. Only Krishna. Only. That's an inner vow. Only Krishna. Only Krishna. I swear that from this day on, only Krishna. Relax. Don't get uptight. It is not necessary to punish yourself with such an inner vow. It's allowed to be natural. In fact, better be natural. But think about it. Think about it carefully. Because whatever you accept, right? Don't just jump for the golden deer, because, you know, that little deer one may give all kinds of complications. So be careful. So, with thoughtfulness, create a situation. But be somewhere which works, in a place that works. Live somewhere, wherever you like it. Why punish yourself?
I think that, you know, maybe, like I said it yesterday, but I think some devotees would do well to start a community together. Something. Community life. It can be like in a village arrangement where everyone is private and yet lives together. We tried community life, but in the past it was all together, and that was a little difficult. Everyone in a common place, and you don't have your own. You want your own, but it is good when the neighbors are also devotees. Better than someone having a barbecue next door. Oh God, the neighbors are having a barbecue. Yeah, we know. But you have neighbors like that. In Brisbane, in that old temple we had, there was this huge redneck of a neighbor. Really, like, big. And he was totally obnoxious, really obnoxious. And for years he was harassing us. Until one day there was a big black-bodied devotee, and he went to him, and he told this neighbor, he said, "I'm sick and tired of you, okay? I'm sick and tired of you, and we're not going to have it anymore." And the neighbor screaming and yelling at him, and then this black devotee said, "Listen, I am black. I have no fear." That did it. We never had problems with that neighbor again. But it took like serious action. It can be difficult. So we should make arrangements for our personal well-being. It's actually important. You know, don't
we can think about that, you know.
How can we be more together, at least with some devotees? That would be nice.
That would be nice.
I know some that had a big house far away from the temple, and then, okay, they moved closer to the temple, got a smaller house, and it's a bit cramped, but at least it's closer to the temple. That's maybe a good idea. Location. I was a Grihastha, but I also, once I was living 20 kilometers away from the temple for a while. And then in the winter I was in Europe and I had to drive over ice in the morning. And I would go to the temple, but it was dangerous. 180 on a country road to make it from Mongolia.
The trees were flying past.
Krishna protected me, otherwise I think if one of those trees would have jumped on the road, which trees sometimes do, so they say, it would have been a problem. So this personal well-being is important. But yeah, it's not all about being comfortable in a nice association and in a good Krishna conscious environment. We also need to have some bhajan. I spoke about that. We need to have some sadhana. We need to build that up. You know, some spiritual practice. We have to do something. You know, you can't just do the basics. Learn some songs. You know, like yesterday night, I was a little rusty on my vibhavarishesa, and it got exposed, and I didn't do it for a while. See. Because I used to know it completely by heart, but yesterday a few mistakes on the words. I think, what was it again? But it's such a nice song, right? And actually, it's nice to learn such songs. Right? It is nice to do such a thing. It takes a little effort. And now with the whole family, we're going to sing some bhajans. We're gonna sit around and have some bhajans, you know. Ridiculous, you know. God, you know. That's who does these things? Nah, we're just gonna sit all around the television, you know. That's normal. But actually, if you start at home. A little bit of kirtan. You train, this one plays the kartals, that one the drum, that one the harmonium. Practicing again. But after a while, you get good. And when that's there in the family, that's nice. That's actually a nice thing to have. You know, we have a little kirtan at home. Not only in the retreat, no, at home. It's like, and I know some families where they do it like that, and there's really some life in the house, some spiritual energy is there in the house. Simple things like that. We can do, and then let there be some prasadam, and you know, and when we get a little good at the bhajans, then you can have a bhajan evening in your house one day a week, and people will come, and you cook it up, and you have bhajans in your house. Everybody will love it, and the prasadam is good, and everybody brings something, and you know my proposal, right? I've told that to all of you before, but you forgot it. You didn't do it. But I said, it takes 30 families. If 30 families invite each other one day a month, you invite the other 29 to your house. And you know, and you cook it up, a feast, right? That one day. All right, cook a big feast. And then the next day, it's in someone else's house. You know, in that way, you only have to cook once a month. And you get a feast every day. Is it a good idea or not? Think about it. Takes only 30 families, a pool of 30 families. Simple thing. It can be done. I'm very practical. Good. Yeah. I said I was a good manager in my days. Cook only once a month. You get a feast every day. Cook all you want. Okay, spend a bit on petrol, I know, but you get devotee association. Yeah. Every night. If not every night, then every other night. Then you need only 15 families. Right? If not every other night, once in 3 days. You know, okay. Even less. Yeah. Only 10. Like that. Few friends. What a few friends can do. When they invite each other. But we don't do. We don't do such things. We just don't do. We go to work. We all go in our own house. We all lock the door. We all, like, you know, somehow or other, sit there. And, you know, mom is busy getting the kids to school. And, you know, and dad is shaving and getting ready. And in between, you know, like, well, a few rounds or a little puja, you know, like something. You know, something, light some incense, throw some flowers around the house. And, yeah, and off you go, off to work. Yeah. It's like, that means we have no bhajan. We don't have a culture of bhajan. Yeah. So we have to create this culture of bhajan. We really have to make that endeavor. And if you say, I have no time. Well, then maybe the job that you have is the wrong situation. Maybe that's something. Maybe you can't quit today, but maybe you should work yourself out of a job. And just save some money and find another way to solve the economic problems. A little more creative than just slotting into a job that squeezes you to a point where there's nothing left. Not that I'm saying it must be like that. I'm just saying, consider. I'm just offering some creative thinking here and say, it's out of the box, right? Because otherwise, we have all the excuses why the external circumstances don't allow us to be Krishna conscious. And the truth is, then change the external circumstances, isn't it? If they don't allow us, change them. It's like, I didn't do that. I was married for 24 years, but I didn't work from Monday to Friday, from 9 to 5. No, I didn't. I didn't. I did a little business here, I did a little business there. And later I took up some responsibility in this company. Okay. But, and something for the mission. That means some service. Some service we have to do. Some service for the temple. Some connection with the temple. Something. If you have no time, then some donation. Something. You have to invest in that something. Weekend warriors. Right? It's huge in California. Vaisheshika, who is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada and a spiritual master in our movement, who is a book distributor from day one, and he is so good at book distribution. He does it so nicely. He has really perfected it that he meets people and everything is a pleasant experience. I'm going 5 minutes over time just to finish this. I was in New York and I was distributing books with him, and there was an old man who came dressed in sort of grey conservative clothing, and this man kind of didn't look very happy, and I approached him with the book. Dirty face. Nothing I could do with that man. And then from behind, Vaisheshika came up and he says to the man, excuse me, are you a professor? And suddenly the man started to smile. And he says, not quite. And next moment he had the book in his hand. he purchased the book and they were shaking hands and they were the best of friends. And I just looked at it like, how did he do that? You know? I mean, that was amazing. So he's very expert. And he has invented this program called Weekend Warriors and so many other ways that also that people can distribute books. And I heard something is happening in North Sydney. There is a website, it is called distributebooks.com. You can have a look at it. Just next time you Google, look at distributebooks.com. Because it's actually, everyone can do something. And if we do some strange experience will be there. Something awkward. That sort of strange thing in the heart. Yes, God, what's that? What's that in my heart here? What's that? It's called satisfaction. Yeah. Wow. Actually, there is some sort of satisfaction that comes after, you know, after. I admit, at first when you do it, it's tough. But some sort of satisfaction comes after. And why not? The devotee community in California, where Vaisheshika lives, is on fire. I mean, there are so many people out there. It's just amazing. Many, by the way, are from Indian background. Yes. That's just in brackets. So, yeah, we can try. After all, Bharata Bhumite Holo Manushya Janma Jara Janma Sartika Kali Paro becomes. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted this verse, Bharata Bhumite Holo, it is Bengali, but, you know, possibly you can catch a little bit. Bharate Bhumi. Okay, those who have taken birth on the Bhumi. What is Bhumi? Land. What is Bharat? India. Bharat. Babri Bab. Bharat. Bharate Bhumite Holo. Those who have taken their birth in the land of Bharat, they should do something to bring this Krishna consciousness to the world. So that is the special duty of those who are in Bharat. So the temple is not only for us. It's not a club. Radha Gopinath Club. Or Radha Vallabha Club. Really nice. They go every Sunday. So tasty. Wow, prasad, so tasty. Just like in India. Sanjeev Puri. Even the halima, rasagulla, everything. Sandesh. Oh, so good. So tasty. Sanjeev Puri, pakora. Very good. Very tasty. So all that is there. Fine. But it's not for us only. It's also that we must do something. Something. Actually, you came to Australia only for that reason. It was the plan of Lord Chaitanya. You came to Australia to bring Krishna consciousness to the Australians, not just to the Indians. The Indians, Prabhupada said, the Indians, they are like devotees who have sort of left Krishna. They've just blooped. Prabhupada called this blooping, going back into the material ocean. Bloop into the water. So they've turned away from Krishna, now they want material life. But they are devotees. So it's very easy. Easy to awaken the Krishna consciousness. But now the Australians, your job, Bharata Bhumita, Manusha Janja, there's something. We have to do something about it. How? I don't know. Look at the Google, distributedbooks.com. Never look at that, because they're doing something. They're really doing something. Because how will we preach? Hari Sori was Prabhupada's secretary. He said, Prabhupada, as Hari Sori speaks, Prabhupada, I'm going out and preach. I'm going out and preach. And Prabhupada said, you want to go and preach? What will you preach? What will you preach? How can you preach? He said, you cannot preach. He said, I am preaching, Prabhupada says. I am preaching. What will you preach? So, if we are going to preach, we preach, you go out and say, people, just take this chanting of Hare Krishna. And they don't do it. Why not? Because we are not convinced. And because we're not convinced, we're not convincing. Yeah. But when Prabhupada said it, because he was so convinced and so realized and so happy, then it was very convincing. Therefore Prabhupada said, my books will preach. I preach through my books. So that's the idea behind book distribution. And it works. Because people read the books, they come. It's not the only thing. I've emphasized that a lot now. Right? And I don't want to just say that. I'm just, this is an advertisement. Distributebooks.com. Yeah. But there is obviously many ways. Give some prasadam to people, just something. Invite someone to your house, someone from work. Just invite them home for prasadam. Why not? One of these, someone from work who's like maybe slightly interested. I'll invite you. They'll come. So they'll come. Can break the ice. Instead of just inviting someone, you are Gujarati, and instead of inviting only other Gujaratis, what I say? It's like, invite someone and you'll be surprised. It's very nice when you get invited by someone, unexpectedly. I used to travel, and I was once in Yugoslavia, as it was called in those days, and just some boy invited me, just like that, to stay in his house. And his parents were there, and I just stayed with that family for some days, and they just took me like a family member. It was a big experience for me, that was like a, in traveling, that was something, like just some people who just accepted me, although I was a stranger, in their house. It was so nice. And I was so touched by it. Simple thing. We can also do it. So we can do something. We should. Instead of just, it's so hard to chant my rounds, 16 is so many. And I got so many left. I do today, I have 8 left. It's been not so good. But what to do? We'll manage it. But somehow or another, manage it.
All right, that was my point. Let me just quickly look at the schedule because I went over, but I wanted to finish the point. Sunday, Saturday, breakfast. And then we wait till 10:30, so that should be fine, right? So, okay, we'll take our breakfast, have a little break. It's just probably now, so that's fine. And then at 10:30 we're here again, and some of you, I had already promised that I would be available for a personal talk, right? So we can also begin with that, right, around this time. And then 10:30, we'll carry on. And I hope that that you're having a good time. Last year our retreat was in Govinda Valley, and that's a little more luxurious, you know. This place is a little more austere, but it's not the essence. The essence is our sangha. We are here for satsang. That's the essence. So, some tapasya, what to do. It's also purifying. Sometimes we're on the heavenly planets, and other times we're in the Girl Scout place. Let's see next time if we can get the heavenly planets again. All right, we'll break for breakfast. Thank you very much. See you.